Welcome, everybody, to Saving Capitalism. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing good. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Avery. You came from the panhandle of Florida up north. So I'm very grateful you made the journey here in person.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, this is great. And I've got a lot of questions for you because I feel like, you know, your area of expertise has really changed over the last little bit. And it's interesting, a lot of the questions I think that have arisen and have come up. So I'm gonna want to dig in. I've got a whole lot that I want to ask. But
right.
Before that, why don't you give people a little background on what you do, how you got into this whole thing. So you're specialized,
which
yes.
I
like that a lot.
Yeah, so I got into real estate investing by accident. My husband and I were moving from New York City to Nashville, Tennessee back in 2012, 2013. And our real estate agent at the time was really trying to get us to buy in East Nashville, which was like the super hip, fast appreciating area. She was telling us, oh, these houses are appreciating $100,000 in a year. And nobody knew COVID was around the corner and that kind of appreciation. But we were like, no thanks. We're moving from Brooklyn to Tennessee. We want to move out in the country. So we bought some acreage that was, well, it was 1 acre, but it was cut out of a big farm. So it looked like we live on a farm, but we only had to maintain an acre of it. But we started thinking, because I was super into my husband too, personal finance at the time. So we were thinking, I had just finished my master's degree. I was working in the music business in Nashville because we both had, I don't want to say careers, pasts as musicians elsewhere. So I'd finished my master's degree to get a job in the music business in Nashville. And that was around the time we bought the house and we were thinking, well, you know what? Maybe it's a great idea. Not a good idea to do it this way, by the way. We said, maybe we should take this little bit of money that we have left, buy one of these houses, put a renter in it. We didn't even know it was called real estate investing at the time. And we said, well, we won't be paying our own mortgage. They'll be paying the mortgage. And then when our future kids, we had just gotten married, so we were married at the time. But when our future kids go to college, we'll just sell this, and that appreciation will pay for their college, and we'll be these great geniuses that didn't have to pay for college out of our pockets. So we bought one, and went to some real estate meetups at the beginning in Nashville, and everybody told us, oh, Nashville's over, you had to buy 10 years ago to make money. And we were listening to all these real estate investors talk about how much money they're spending on direct mail and all these things that sounded so big and scary. And we were like, man, we don't know what we're doing. Maybe we should just not do this. And we bought a house right off the MLS. There were no pictures. We got a little lucky because the agent was inexperienced. It was her parents' house. It was her first listing. She posted it with no photos. Had there been photos, it was like perfectly turnkey. It would have been multiple offers. And we went, snatched it up. Mortgage on that was $650. We rented it for $1,500 a month. So pretty damn good for a long-term single family.
Absolutely.
And so making $1,000 a month was actually, after all the deductions of my dream job salary, which the music business pays nothing, by the way, I was making about that. My salary on paper was $37,000 a year. I asked for $40,000 and they told me it was outrageous. And so we were like, man, we just doubled my income with this one house. We have a little money left. What can we buy? We can only buy one thing. It had to be small, single family, because we didn't have much money.
Yeah.
And so we landed on, well, let's try a short-term rental. But we didn't want to do it in Nashville because there was already anti-short-term rental regulation. So we couldn't afford to buy something and then be told a couple years later, hey, you can't do this. It would have ruined us. So we just been on vacation to the Smoky Mountains, about 3 hours east of Nashville, Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg area. And we stayed in a cabin. I stayed in cabins there with my parents growing up, and everybody else was staying in cabins. So we figured somebody owns these. Why can't it be us? And then this was about 2015, so well before the gold rush of short-term rentals. There weren't courses. There weren't coaches in the space. And so we thought, okay, I guess we need a property manager. Shopped around, found that the average property management split in that market was 40% of your gross. And we said, whoa, wait a minute, we can't afford to do that.
Yeah.
So we figured out, we said, we got to be able to do this from Nashville with Airbnb and Vrbo apps. We just need a cleaner and a handyman, and then we can kind of get started. So we truly started from scratch.
Yeah.
And it scaled 1 to 5 over the course of the next year or two, now we've got 250 doors over all kinds of asset classes. Only 8 of those are short-term rentals. And then I started the short-term shop, which is my main business, probably 2017. So, or 2019. I got licensed in 2017, so it would have been 2019. Because there weren't really any agents in the space who could answer our questions about, like, is this a good location for this? I don't know. So started, it was just me in the Smokies, and I was driving 3 to 4 hours every day to go show cabins. And then eventually we opened up in other markets. So down in the panhandle of Florida where I live now, now we've got 20 markets across the United States. We are the top team at eXp, which is a big brokerage like Keller Williams. So we've grown the business really big. We've got a mortgage company now, and then we of course have our rentals. So
that's amazing. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And when you were trying to decide what made you think of short-term rentals, why like you obviously had success in the single family home, it was working. So why short-term rentals?
So over the course of that kind of learning what we were going to do and buying that first house, it was about 8 or 9 months. And we had a budget of $100,000 when we started. We had some of that saved up, but over the course of time it took us to save up the rest, those $100,000 houses were $150,000 houses. So we'd saved up for this, and then we thought, well, I don't know if this is repeatable. I don't know if we can get another house for the price that we got, which was, I think, ended up being $122,000. And so we said, well, what can we buy that's going to make us the most amount of money the fastest so that we can scale faster? And that's why we chose short-term rentals, because we said, oh, well, this is going to make more than $1,000 a month, hopefully. There was no data back then either. So that's why we went the short-term rental route.
Okay. And it, I mean, really, you experienced short-term rentals because you did it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you went back, which is something I actually really love, like, because we did that too. We were in an area, we loved this area in northern Idaho, and because we knew it and understood it and why people went, we invested in that market,
right?
And at the time, it was an overlooked market, but we understood the basics and the fundamentals. I think a lot of people miss that, where, like, you hop on a hot trend or something that you're looking, but there's a lot of places that you know, like what you said, we go there, we rent a cabin, we like it. Other people, I have since I was a kid, like it's no, this is fundamentals, right? Makes sense. And so walk me through though again here, that 40% property management fee, how did you solve that problem?
We decided to just self-manage and do it ourselves.
You weren't living there though.
No.
So how'd that work? Do you drive? I mean, it was 3 hours away?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we just hired a cleaner who, you can't do this anymore, but back then you could get on Airbnb and message other hosts and just say like, oh, hi, would you be willing to share your cleaner? And most of them would slam the door in your face. Now they'll boot you from the platform for doing that. You can get in trouble. But if they report you, maybe they don't. Finally, someone took pity on us and was like, oh yeah, I self-manage mine from California or somewhere. And here's my cleaner. So we hired that cleaner, and that cleaner knew a couple handymen. So we had built out our network from her, and we just took a shot at it, which was very risky. Looking back, it was every last penny that we had, but we were pretty sure about it, as sure as you could be without, you know, all the tools that we have now. And so we self-manage, and that's what we teach our clients at the short-term shop. So if you buy a house with us, we teach you how to manage it for free. So all while you're under contract. So you don't have to go through that stumbling block of figuring it out. But we just learned as we went.
Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. That's how we were too. It's funny. I was literally, we had a conversation this morning. I was with somebody, and like you said, when we started, there wasn't courses, there wasn't social media, there wasn't a podcast I could go listen to. It was literally us just figuring it out, calling somebody and saying, hey, you have a towing company. Could you stop by and unlock these doors? And I mean, that's what it was. We didn't have answers. We just had to figure it out. And I feel like that stops a lot of people today because it's information overload.
Yeah.
They are looking at it saying, there's so much information. I should be able to find that out. But that's not how it really works when you get into it. And I think that's a skill that is being more and more lost. It's like, I'm going to do it. I get the fundamentals, the basics. I don't know the outcome, but I'm going to do it and figure it out. And it's nice, though, that people do have resources like you and others that they say, okay, help me along the way. How did that move into? So you had investments, you had doors. Why go into that space, the brokerage side?
So it kind of happened around the same time. So I got my license on our third deal, mainly because my husband is a New Yorker and handles everything like by breaking knees and was embarrassing me with real estate agents. So I was like, I'm gonna get my license so people don't have to deal with you.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. So it started
what
like
a great
that.
Answer. I love that.
Yes.
Yep. I love that.
And then we had friends who would say, you're making how much on that cabin? Well, help me buy one, teach me how to do it. Then friends of friends, and then it became true clients. So it just kind of grew organically into this thing that we had to organize into the way that it is now because of the volume of people coming through the door.
Another thing that I appreciate, because most of the stuff we're doing, people are like, you know, oh, how do I? And I'm like, it was an organic process. We had a need, we filled it, we built it out, we, you know, just took care of it. And it wasn't even necessarily, not necessarily, it wasn't a part of the plan at all when we got started.
Yeah.
It was something that we had an opportunity and could figure out. And so we just did it along the way. And that changes. Obviously, today, the landscape's different. And that's one of the biggest questions I have. Now we have some context and background. I want to talk about some things that I want to know. I hear there's a lot of noise out there talking about short-term rentals.
Mm-hmm.
The short-term rental landscape has changed dramatically.
Yeah.
I know states, cities, counties, things have been very aggressive. And you have entire states like California that basically blame short-term rentals on their housing crisis, which is ludicrous to begin with. I'm not even going to get into how ridiculous that is. But the pressure is really, really big. And also the competition is way more. And so I've heard a lot of people saying that it's just not what it used to be and can't make money. Now, I come from an industry where I also hear that. And I'm like, okay, that's obviously not true because that's not how it works. It's not like it's a light switch on and off. But I would like to know how it's changed.
Okay.
And with all this noise out there about short-term rentals, what is your perspective? What's changed? And what's the landscape look like right now?
Okay. So here's my perspective. And I've been investing in short-term rentals for a decade now, well before everybody jumped in, which I'm happy they did. I think it's a great asset class. I like to, since I also invest in multifamily, I kind of look at multifamily as like the elder sibling of short-term rentals. So short-term rentals is not a new asset class when you think about it. So down where I live in the panhandle of Florida, which is called the Emerald Coast, and then all the way over to Gulf Shores, Alabama, there have been vacation rentals since 1930, maybe a little earlier. So it's not new. And there's a lot of areas around the country, those regional drivable vacation markets where you went with your parents when you were a kid and you didn't stay in a hotel. You stayed in a condo or beach house, lake house, things like that. We try to focus on those types of markets. So while it's a newer asset class in terms of people kind of catching on and you being able to make money, so it really kind of turned a corner when things digitized. So Airbnb, Vrbo, yes, but in the areas that we try to keep our investments and try to keep our real estate offices, all of the real estate that's ever been bought and sold in these areas is 90% vacation rentals anyway. So there's not really, it's not like all of these single family homes that were primary homes and long-term rentals flooded the market by people converting them. It's just short-term rentals changing hands. Now you're getting a lot more noise about it because younger people are buying them. It kind of was a generational switch as well with boomers, or whatever the generation just slightly older than boomers is, having these things, selling them as they get older or dying, and then people like us in their 30s and 40s buying them as an investment. Anyway, back to multifamily being the elder sibling. So you don't hear multifamily investors running around saying things like, oh, it's saturated. There's too many apartment buildings in this market. I am not going to buy here. I got to go find the market where there's no apartment buildings. They look for the opportunity to make the upgrades to make the numbers work. You're not going to find, you know, like a 15 cap laying around on the market.
Mm-hmm.
In short-term rentals, we kind of look at cash on cash return more than cap rate because it's still single family residential. Yep. You used to be able to find, back when prices were in the toilet before the appreciation happened of 2020 to last year, and you could find 50% cash on cash return deals laying around. But now that the prices have kind of caught up with that, it's not necessarily a commercial asset, it's residential, but it kind of behaves that way with the prices having gone up because investors are willing to pay more for a property that has performed better than one that hasn't. So it kind of drove the prices up significantly. So in terms of like the whole saturation thing, I think that it's just time for short-term rental investors to kind of grow up a little bit and understand that this is what every other asset class is like. It's just, we've established ourselves now. Now we're an asset class like everybody else. And we have to employ those same strategies of, you're not just gonna find these crazy deals laying around on the MLS like you could 10 years ago. In terms of cities regulating against them, we try to stay in regional drivable vacation markets where basically everything is a short-term rental. So Smokies in Tennessee, Panhandle of Florida where we are, Gulf Shores, Alabama, you know, any number, anybody can name any number of places like that because the municipalities and counties are so dependent on the income from short-term rentals that they would never really regulate against them.
Yeah, it's their industry.
Yeah.
You know, all of these things are just, you speak to my industry as well. Like it, self-storage where people are like, I'm like, just because you didn't know about it before, then you heard about it and now lots of people are in it. It just means we grew up.
Yeah.
I'm like, the industry just grew up. It doesn't mean there's not opportunity. Like you're saying, it's like the boat didn't pass. Apartments, commercial, been around for how long? That's not how it works, right? But I think short-term rentals and self-storage were just like a big buzzword for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then it's like people came back down to earth. And it's like, oh, okay, listen, the buzz is gone. It's not that it's bad. It's great investment, everything else like that. But yeah. It's just the buzz is gone and it's a natural cycle and it's good. It's still amazing. I'm doing it and I think everybody else should. Mm-hmm. And I think short-term rentals needed to find its place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people like were, you know, even back in the early days, oh, hotels are over, right? And it's like, what? Hotels aren't going away. That's
right.
Not going to happen.
Yeah.
And short-term rentals aren't driving all the housing prices up. That's not also happening. And it's like those things kind of just become, because people know about it, they see about it, they mm-hmm. understand it. Oh, we're going to blame this for that problem. Now,
yeah.
The bad thing is, though, that does cause regulation mm-hmm. and increased scrutiny. I mean, same thing with storage. That happens with us, too. Where do you see that scrutiny? You mentioned like cities where those are vacation towns, right? Drivable vacation towns. What about major metropolitan areas? So people listening that are like, okay, I'm in Nashville, Boise, Austin, you know, more like a second tier market. And they have these and they kind of thrive off of them. Is that something they should be worried about?
It depends on the market for sure. That's why I personally don't invest in short-term in metro markets because you just kind of never know. Areas like Nashville and Austin, they seem to have kind of figured out their regulation where there's certain zones where it's almost always going to be a purpose-built like condo building or townhome development that you can buy short-term rentals where it's allowed. We did have an office in Nashville for a minute when we lived there, but I shut it down because there was so much. We had clients getting under contract on pre-construction townhome developments, zoned for STR, made specifically to be STRs. 3 years down the road when they're done, all of a sudden the city council's changed the zoning and now it's not. And we've got developers trying to hold these people in the contracts and lawsuits. I'm like, I'm not dealing with this. I'm not subjecting my clients to this anymore. We're not doing this type of market anymore. But they seem to have figured it out. But then areas like New Orleans, for example, is... I would love to buy something in New Orleans because that's like the closest big city to us. So yeah. We took our kids to see the Eagles in New Orleans last weekend. And, you know, there's pro football and pro basketball and like all these big city things to do. But New Orleans is just anti. Their city council wants nothing. Like they want no short-term rentals. Mm-hmm. So you really always have to make sure you are calling the city or the county directly. Don't take the advice of your agent or anybody, especially on the internet. Don't listen to Facebook people.
Yes.
Call yourself and find out because you never know what's coming.
I couldn't agree with that more. That's a big problem. I think once again, we're talking about like overload on information. I see this a lot where people are like, oh, that market, you know, they're building everywhere. And then you call the city up and ask them and they're like, no, we have no projects at all under construction. You're going, wait a second. How did that even happen? So doing your own diligence. Now, have the margins shrunk in short-term rentals?
So they have if you're trying to buy something turnkey. So the prices have gone up. I would say about half, maybe 2/3 of my portfolio were rehab projects. And there's a lot of ways without actually rehabbing a property, with whether it's just changing decor, optimizing management, adding amenities, that you can add income to a property that doesn't necessarily add equity. Two different types of value add here. But the margins, if you don't buy right, have. If you don't manage right, they have. What we saw in 2021 to maybe beginning of last year was a lot of people who are not investors, who are not looking at these things as the business that they are, seeing interest rates what they were and saying, oh wait, the mortgage payment on a beach house is going to be how much? I can afford that. I'll slap it up on Airbnb when I'm not using it and make money. And then those are the people who got their asses handed to them when things kind of calmed down a little bit, went back to normal, and they're like, wait a minute, I have to manage my pricing, I have to do things. And so I think those are the people that kind of got, you know, left out to dry.
No, that makes perfect sense. While things were crazy, that's the same thing. Once again, that even happened like in storage, where it was just everybody was full all the time and prices were going up and people would buy, oh, this is easy. And then that changed. And then people are like, oh no, what's happening? I got to fill these up. I've got to, you know, and it's a fundament. I tell everybody, it's a business. You got to treat it like it is. You got to look at the fundamentals. You got to plan. I don't think you should go into anything thinking it's like an investment, like roll the dice and, you know, expect it to go up. Now, there's a lot of people that I know that do portfolios with that. How does that change? So obviously a lot of people, like you just mentioned, like, oh, I want to go here, so I'll get a short-term rental and then I can use it while I'm there, right? But then someone building a business out of short-term rentals, because short-term rentals seems, it became this thing where people are like, no, I'm in the business of short-term rentals, not just real estate investing. Like they treated it like a business, which is great. That should be doing. Walk me through that. How are these people? What are they? They're trying to scale. How does that look? How do you scale in this asset class?
It depends. It's always easiest to buy more properties in the same market and just add to the existing system that you've already built. But the cool thing about this market or this asset class is that you can, if you want to have a beach house and you want to have a mountain house and you want to do all these things and have all these different places, you can still run your business like that. It's not going to be efficient in any way, shape, or form, but you can do it and people do it. So we don't see, at least in the markets that we're in, anybody doing like multifamily and trying to turn those into short-term rentals. We see people doing that in metro markets. It just does not work for the vacation market, really, because people want to be by themselves. We do see people eventually scale into boutique hotels, like mom and pop roadside motels that have the cool neon signs that everybody's passed one of those and been like, oh man, I want to rehab that. That would be so cool. So we see people get into that too. But mostly people are just adding single families in the same market or different markets. So mine is, I've got 5 in the Smokies and 4 in the Florida Panhandle, or 3 in the Florida Panhandle. So we're a little spread out, but not so much that I need to have at least 3 in one market to kind of make it worth doing.
And now walk me through not self-managing it. What are the expectations around that, like expenses, things like that? So if I'm hiring a third-party management company to do that, what is the normal charge?
Now it's between 20 and 25% of your gross. So that doesn't sound terrible.
That's a lot.
It is. So to
give storage, we're like 6%.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, to give you some perspective on like my portfolio, 8 properties, if I would have paid a manager 25% last year, no extra fees, nothing, I would have paid somebody $250,000 for a job that is like a $50,000 job. So what a lot of people will do when they get to the point of, okay, I'm being, you know, the pie lady from eMyth here doing all this stuff myself, is hiring in-house VAs. So we've got a few VAs that help us in all aspects of our business. But one of them part-time, we've got 8, and it's only part-time for him. He's got a lot of other jobs across all our other things, manages the communication with our guests in a short-term rental. So that's what people are kind of doing to get around once they get to that point that they can't do everything anymore, is training a VA to do it.
That makes sense. It's cheap, it's easy, it's remote, everything else is remote, and you can really streamline that. So that's awesome. All right, getting into it today, what would you tell people that they need to, how do I find a good property? Like, if I'm like, oh, I want to do this, how do you know, how do you find a good property, a good deal that you're like, this will be a high cash flowing deal?
Okay. So, man, that could be such a long answer. okay. So you want to choose a market first, because the market that you choose is almost more important than the property itself in terms of regulations, tourism. So what we see now, I think that new investors have it harder in a way than we did when we started, with all the different noise coming from all the different influencers. And there's a lot of data companies out there now that will tell you where to buy and what to buy. But where I've seen them get led astray, and we've got actually a very big fund who, we have a lot of their listings right now where they made very data-driven decisions, and none of that qualitative, okay, what do tourists like to do here? Yes. Why are they coming? Who's coming? And just saw, for example, a five bedroom makes this much. This five bedroom is cheaper than all the other five bedrooms, so this is the one I'm gonna buy. Well, they bought something weird that people don't really wanna stay in, yep. So it hasn't performed well, and now they wanna dump it. So I think people are getting, it's hard to kind of cut through the noise and figure out what it is you wanna do. So my advice would be, you know, choose a market that you, I focus on vacation rental investing, so not speaking to metro markets, but choose a market that you're familiar with, that you like to go to, because then you kind of understand, because you are the demographic that you're gonna be renting to, then you understand why people come there, where is good and where is not. We see people all the time. I'll get people who didn't buy with our company who will come to me and say, hey, I have this property in your market and it's not renting. Can you look at it and tell me what's wrong with it? And I'm like, well, you bought on the bay. People don't go to the bay, they go to the Gulf. People will never vacation to the bay. And they're like, oh, well, I saw it on this list of best places to invest from some management company or yep. from, and they just do it without knowing yep. anything about the market. Yep. And I think that that's the biggest setback. So choose your market based on something that you know, so you don't get caught up in the whole data thing. And you have to understand the qualitative side of analyzing a property, that in short term, two properties that are next door to each other that are identical can do wildly different numbers just based on how they're managed. So small tweaks, like one has a 3-night minimum night stay, the other one has a 7-night minimum night stay. The 3 nights probably gonna do better because they have less holes in their calendar. So in terms of choosing a property, for size, my favorite answer to that question is buy the property that you can afford. Don't try to impress your friends. Buy the thing that you can afford, that's cute, clean, and comfortable, that is what tourists have come to expect from a rental in that market, and you're gonna be fine. But choose that market wisely and make sure that you understand how it works and where people go and why in that market to choose the right property.
Okay. I love that. And that fits very much to a lot of my thinking. I'm like, there's things that I control and I can't control. First and foremost, you got to get the things right that you can't control, because nothing else matters after that. And that's the market. It's not good. Nothing you can do about it. You can't tweak it or make it any better than that. Awesome. Well, now, what do you think the future of vacation rentals are? Do you think this is something that, I mean, a lot of people have looked at this with all the changes, and is it going to be keep being as robust? Do you think more people are going to get out of it? How do you think that over the next 10 years, this industry is going to change or not change?
I think that the real estate in the true vacation markets, where everything that's been bought and sold, there has always been vacation rentals. It's changed from old school property management companies that weren't on Airbnb and Vrbo. They've been doing everything the same since the 80s or the 70s, over to more optimized managers, younger managers who are optimizing things, optimizing technology. I think that those types of markets are going to only increase in value as more metro markets kind of figure out what their regulations are going to be. Maybe they ban them all together. So my advice is to stick to the vacation markets for that reason. And there are vacation markets that are not super friendly. Breckenridge, for example. Over the next 10 years, I do expect to see a increase in value, especially in those types of markets. I think that there's definitely a real data problem in the short-term rental space. There's a lot of people coming out with data companies and saying, oh, well, let me tell you where to buy and what to buy, and they've never been there, and people are buying weird things, and trying to get people to, you know, give me 10 grand and I'll tell you where to buy, and then sending them off to these markets where there's really not any rentals. There's I think we need to get past in the short term this idea that, oh, we have to go buy in places where there's no rentals. And I'm not really sure how we got to this place, because for me, when I'm looking at a market, I want to see a track record of tourism decades back, because you're not just going to have 10 million people a year visit. Like where I live, we have 10,000 permanent residents. We get 10 million visitors a year. It's been like that for decades. That's not going to go away probably in my lifetime. That's what I want to see. I don't want to go trailblaze into a market where there's nobody and there's not a lot of tourism. And I think that the idea that there are undiscovered markets is a little bit silly. Like, if there are markets that are good are being discovered. Invested in.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That's why they're good, because they're discovered.
Yes. So, you know, the reason there are a lot of rentals in some markets is because there's a lot of demand.
Yes.
If there's not demand, there's not going to be a lot of rentals. It's kind of funny how that works.
Yeah.
So I think that it's hard to say. I think it's going to continue on a steady, like, upward trend, not steeply upward, but upward, because now that we've gotten through that whole gold rush era, and then a lot of people jumping out who maybe didn't buy for the right reasons, or who bought during the rush and bought in bad locations, so not in the core area that you should buy in these areas, buying 30, 40 minutes away. That worked in 2021, but we were seeing a lot of those kinds of people getting out. So I think overall it's stabilized, and I think it'll continue to be stable now that we've kind of gotten over that initial bell curve, early adopter, everybody jump in vibe, which I'm looking forward to. I'm happy for it to be stabilized.
Yes. Yeah, that was the same with us. In storage, everybody's like, it's so good. I'm like, no, this is bad. Mm-hmm. It's too crazy. It's just too crazy. And the pendulum swings the other way.
Yeah.
When it gets that crazy, that has third order consequences. Then they overbuild. Then cities are like, what's going on? And it's like, it's like, you may be good in that moment because you're like, oh, we're making so much money. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, stabilization is much, much better.
Yeah, I agree. So,
especially for long-term planning. But, well, awesome. This has been, first of all, so interesting for me, because I'm so interested in these short-term rentals and I don't know a lot about them. And I've had a lot of questions on, you know, the market in general, because like you were saying, you hear a lot and a lot of people, you're reading a lot of stuff. Where can people go to find more information, reach out to you, find out about you, because you're an expert in this industry?
Yeah, you can find me on all social media, specifically Instagram and YouTube at The Short Term Shop. We've also got a big Facebook group. It's the same title as my book. It's called Short Term Rental, Long Term Wealth. So you can find us in there too, or always our website, theshorttermshop.com.
Awesome. Thank you. And I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.